Sam Amick of USA Today. He's joining us, and he hopefully is having just as much fun this morning as he was, last Friday when we caught up with you from New Orleans? not
feeling
quite.
A little more refreshed, Nate and Kitty, a little more sleep involved on the home front. Although now we have a new kind of challenge, the domestic challenge. We have sick kids and winter doldrums, but we're hanging in.
Well, that's super. I think it's kind of funny, Sam, that when we were talking last week, I kind of raised the idea of, you know, just people being down at the All-Star break, having a couple drinks, and maybe coming up with a deal that they hadn't before. And then just a few short days later, I don't know that this was a drunken deal, but it sure looked like it when you got the return. DeMarcus Cousins gets shipped out. I mean, that just really kind of came out of nowhere. You were, I'm guessing, not hearing anything of that over the weekend until it happened.
No, not till it happened, not with New Orleans. It was kind of surreal and crazy how quickly it all came together at the game. So I had someone tell me, you know, it started coming out that they were talking. And then right after the game, I ran into, I guess, what you would describe as a Cousins associate, but not a direct one. And I said, hey, are you hearing anything about this? And he looks at me, he's like, oh, yeah, it's done. And I was like, what? And it wasn't out yet that it was done. And I was kind of scrambling, trying to confirm it. And, you know, that is, you know, human nature occasionally does play a part when it comes to trades going down. I think that these guys being able to talk in person probably did facilitate part of the deal a little bit quicker, and combined with the growing Kings angst over the, you know, what the deals might look like in the days to come, I think those two things led to this thing happening.
Sam, so much going on today, and we look at it in the media. There's so much to cover, and it's a little bit exciting because there's just a lot of moving pieces. But from the perspective of the players, I truly feel for them. This is just an agonizing time to go through. But a lot of people's names still left on the trading block and deep in the trade rumors. Do you see a blockbuster trade happening before the deadline? Mainly Paul George and Jimmy Butler's name mentioned a lot. But from everything I've read and heard, if anything happens, it's going to be last minute.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Boston keeps their cards close to the vest like nobody else. And so I had a conversation a couple of days ago that I felt like, and maybe I'll be wrong, but I felt like was a little bit of a clue about the level of Boston's motivation to get something done that might be under the radar. So there's part of me that feels like maybe we'll have a blockbuster deal in a couple hours here. So far, though, it's still quiet as far as that goes. And even the Paul George stuff that I wrote about, there's pressure in Indiana for Larry Bird to improve that roster, because honestly, it's starting to really feel, and I wrote about this yesterday, you know, to feel like it's not a trade demand situation at all for Paul George, because he still genuinely would love to contend for a title with that franchise. But it is a, you know, like we're standing at the fork in the road, and if the roster doesn't get better, then the Pacers can just count the days for when Paul leaves. He wants to sign with the Lakers in free agency two summers from now. So, you know, there's pressure coming from all sides. Chicago, not as much pressure, but they need to make a decision. Do they want to rebuild and move Jimmy now, or do they maybe wait until the summer? They don't have to do it right now. But if Boston, you know, goes all in and they've got that coveted Brooklyn pick that they've been holding on to for so long, where you've got a fantastic draft with, you know, Lonzo Ball and Fultz and these guys who could be franchise point guards. And, you know, those are some of the stakes. So, you know, some definite potential for big-time deals, but, you know, we'll see if they actually happen.
The Bulls are kind of confusing, Sam, because I can't say that, going back to last offseason, that you can really even say that there's a direction there. I mean, Jimmy Butler obviously is hitting his prime, but you go out, you spend some money on Dwayne Wade, who's well past his. Now you're in a position where you're not really a contender, but you're not sure if you want to give up Jimmy Butler. What's the plan there?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard somebody put it this way, like, you know, it's like as far as last summer and the way they went shopping in free agency, it's like you're at the grocery store and you really meant to go to the organic section, but then you run into some some Oreos that give you nostalgia about your childhood, and you just kind of grab them and throw them in the cart. And next thing you know, you look down at your cart, you're like, oh, these are all like, you know, pleasurable things, but they don't fit together all that well. And they were a little bit haphazard about the roster, and it's put them in this kind of a situation. You know, I think Nikola Mirotic is another guy who is very likely to be on the move today. And even that is kind of puzzling, like you're saying, Nate, because, you know, I saw him play in the Olympics, and you see that guy, talent and skill-wise, fantastic player, but he's just not part of their plan, so we'll see what they can get for him. If I was them, though, my hesitation with Butler, even if you found a trade that was going to help you progress in what you're trying to do, man, that's a tough pill to swallow to essentially turn the Celtics into an Eastern Conference beast.
Yeah.
Like, that's what that would make them. So, I mean, I'd be tempted to maybe ship him to the Lakers and go the other direction with it if they maybe got something going there, because Boston is going to be something else if they can actually get Jimmy.
One thing really is intriguing to me about this whole situation with Chicago, there's been so much drama there surrounding Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler both speaking out quite a bit this season in just ways that it surprises me. But maybe because Dwayne Wade has never been in the situation where he is with this Bulls team in which they're trying to win. He's been on a great Miami team his entire career where they've competed for titles. But a lot of the reason why he signed with Chicago in the first place, Sam, is because he wanted to play with Jimmy Butler. And he's been very vocal with the media about saying, hey, this is why I came here. And if something changes, it may change my decision on whether or not I opt out of the next, you know, the next year of my contract. But Sam, seriously, regardless of if Jimmy goes or not, would Dwayne Wade be insane to opt out of that contract at his age and his level of play right now?
Remind me what he's looking at, Katie. I don't have it in front of me. What,
gosh.
What kind of money would look? I mean,
I'd have to look it up. I know it's 1 year left, but it's quite a bit. Let me see.
He would. I mean, bottom line, I think what you're getting at is at this stage, you know, when you're in your mid 30s, and even though you can still play at a high level, the vast majority of the league is going to look over you just because of those optics and the fact that, you know, they're looking to build with youth and talent. That's why with Jimmy, 26 years old, it's so enticing. That's not the case with D Wade. So yes, he would be crazy. On top of that, you know, the whole going home story.
Yeah, it's
Chicago.
It's $23.8 million next year.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
You know, he's not – I mean, you always couch things with maybe there's a crazy team that just thinks he's going to sell tickets and they want to get one more piece to contend. So maybe he could find that kind of cash. He's still got game left. But, you know, it's uncomfortable. The whole thing, I think, is uncomfortable. Even if they don't make the deal, it's uncomfortable. Their locker room, like you also had said, you know, when you've got guys snipping at each other. And I think you've got a coaching situation with Fred Hoiberg – where, you know, it's not good to have the entire league saying the jury is out on you a couple of years in. The truth is, I don't think, you know, people are being nice. It's not the jury being out. The people have not been impressed by the impact that he's had in Chicago. And so that's why they need to figure out what they're going to do. And that's why if you look at Boston, I mean, this draft, as you guys know, because you've been hearing the Kings, you know, part of the Kings' justification for doing the Cousins deal is the immense degree to which they value that this draft and how good it's going to be. And they're not alone. It is supposed to be a good one. And so if you're Chicago and you can get one of these big time names, then maybe you do it.
Sam Amick at USA Today joining us on The Drive. Carmelo Anthony's name has popped up. No one seems to have a ton of interest. Derrick Rose in the last 24 hours, his name has popped up as well. You know, the Knicks would like to get rid of either one of those two guys. Do you see them being able to do that?
I think with Derrick Rose, I don't think Melo's going anywhere. Rose is interesting. I mean, I've been told from his side that, you know, just don't sleep on the fact that the Knicks do actually value him. They're not trying to dump Derrick Rose. They are still considering re-signing him this summer. But it's a nuanced situation, like most of these things are, because he is having a good year. I think the fear is that if they're, you know, if he's going to be looking for a max contract, they don't want to be giving him that. Mm-hmm. And so they've, I think, been doing a combination of testing the market to find out who truly values Derek as intel for this summer in free agency, but also definitely leaving the possibility wide open to doing this deal right now, and specifically for Ricky Rubio with Minnesota. They are, you know, they're still talking, and, you know, the Knicks, I believe, are trying to get more than just Rubio, which essentially supports what I'm saying about how they look at Derek. Most people are saying, wait a minute, you can get off Derek and have a, you know, a guy come in who could help your team. You do it, but that's not enough for them. So I think Derek probably goes the Melo thing. You know, it seems like Cleveland and the Clippers were the two places that he wanted to be the most and where he would waive that no trade clause. But with Cleveland not happening, unless it's a Kevin Love deal, that's not going to happen. And then the Clippers, unless, you know, some three-team scenario pops up here in the next couple hours that I'm not aware of, they just don't have the assets to get it done.
Sam Amick of USA Today joining us this morning as the NBA trade deadline is just moments away, really. I mean, 12 o'clock today, so it's beating down on us hard. I'm really curious, when we talk about the Kings, obviously that DeMarcus Cousins trade being made on Sunday, it caught a lot of people off guard. Plenty of people's names, Sam, have been mentioned as being on the trade block. After that, Darren Collison, Ben McLemore, Aaron Aflalo. Obviously, there is a backlog now at the shooting guard position. But other than those names being mentioned as on the trade block, they haven't been mentioned in any trade rumors. Likeliness that there's a change before the trade deadline for the Kings?
With the qualifier that everything can change, I was told yesterday that Collison, and this was not from the Kings, I'll couch, but the Collison was not going anywhere. That was the message that Darren's side was being given. But, you know, that's, again, that could change. Let's not kid ourselves. We got teams where the second the phone rings and there's a better deal, everything changes. So the one that is substantive right now and could definitely evolve is Aaron Aflalo. The Kings and the Pacers have talked about him. The Pacers, he's one of the guys that they have been exploring, trying to give Paul George some of the help that we're talking about. So I don't know what the Kings are looking to get in return, you know, although, and I'm going to send a shudder into Kings fans everywhere, you know, Monte Ellis's name is always out there. And, you know, he's certainly available. And who knows if that's part of the talks. I don't know that part, but I do know the Pacers have got their eyes on Aaron, and, you know, maybe that thing happens here in the next few hours.
I spent a little time roasting Magic Johnson yesterday, Sam, just because I was trying to look for anything to distract my depression with the Kings. Like, hey, you know, at least the Lakers are going to be bad for a while now, too. Like, I'm reading some of Magic's tweets. But then, I mean, God, did he come right out of the gate and make a good deal? Lou Williams for Corey Brewer and a first rounder? That's solid.
No, for sure. For sure. And especially in the context of, yeah, I mean, it was the latest round of Kings pot shots where people started saying, oh, the Kings got this for Cousins. And then the Lakers were able to get a first and you know, and then Brewer. It was a good trade. I had heard that, I forget all the details, something happened. I think they might have even had a better deal on the table for
2 days prior. And then an agent screwed it up, or are we telling it?
where have we heard the story before? I mean, the Magic thing is a trip, man. We could do a whole show about it. He like, I'm giving a massive thumbs up when it comes to the star power value. And I think it's a really real thing. Like, listen, you know, like, I go read the Paul George story I wrote yesterday. You're going to see, like, oh, my God, like, Paul's like a 26-year-old kid who just turned back into a 13-year-old
right.
Lakers fan who, because he grew up in that area, who's just like, oh, my God, I got to go play with Magic. Like, that's, you know, at All-Star Weekend, right before tip-off, rather, Magic and some other of the legends were walking off the floor, Bill Russell, and Magic walks off, and he went past the entire Western Conference team, and it took him like 20 minutes to get off the court because every guy wanted to talk to him, and every guy wanted to dap him and hug him, and so that matters. But I have major, you know, concerns, not the right word because I'm not a Laker fan, but like major questions, I guess, about the day-to-day machinations. Rob Pelinka, smart guy, former agent for Kobe Bryant, but he's never done this. You know, he's got, I get along great with Rob. He's got a lot of enemies in the league, which is an interesting thing to watch. And then they may make another addition and probably will make another addition in their front office, somebody more of a CBA expert and a cap expert. They've also got Ryan West, Jerry West's son. So a lot of layers to Lakerland. But to your question, I mean, that was a good start. I like that trade for sure.
Well, Sam, I want to follow up on that because we have heard so much over the last few days about, and it's probably more, I don't know, vocal the last few days than it has been in a while in terms of kind of a general mistrust between general managers in this league and the havoc that agents can wreak on them behind the scenes. And then you take an agent like Rob Pelinka, who had some big names and probably did a little bit of his own, you know, stuff behind the scenes to either make deals go through or completely blow them up. And what does that do when they enter into a front office position where they're suddenly in that role of the general manager and they have to deal with the same things? Is that helpful for their cause or is it detrimental?
It can be both. To parallel, it's a good question, Katie, and to the Bob Myers, Rob Pelinka comparison is going to be one that I think is going to be front and center. And so far, could not be more different. When Bob got hired by the Warriors, like the worst thing I heard about Bob was folks who questioned his intellect, which has, I think, since, you know, been far surpassed in terms of the job he's done. But it was always couched with, he is a great guy. I just don't know if he's this or that. That was like the worst thing I heard. And then the best was all kinds of folks saying he's going to be great. Bob was never also, this is a key distinction, Bob was never the head of an agency. He was working under Arn Tellem and, you know, a legend in the agent game and kind of a godfather to a lot of agents. And he was learning from Arn. And this is different. Rob had his own agency. Rob had a bitter parting with Arn Tellem, ironically. And then I had one person bring up the backstory about how Rob was the agent for Carlos Boozer when he reneged on his deal with Cleveland and went to Utah in free agency.
Yeah.
And you know, and that left a really bitter taste in a lot of teams' mouths. And so that's the kind of stuff and that's the kind of history that often gets forgotten. And, you know, but it's going to be on the minds of some of the teams and the executives that, you know, Rob is going to now have to be dealing with.
Hey, Sam, you're almost at the finish line, brother. We appreciate you having, 20 minutes for us today? That was lengthy, but you did well.
No worries.
You didn't screw it up, Sam. Good job.
I got enough return on investment. This was a good trade.
It works for us, man. Hey, we appreciate it, Sam. Have a good one.